Cub Scouts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGSC Accra Catskill of Hudson.
Very good.
We recommend this station.
On the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, you can find out about the Ice Skating in the Gilded Age online event that's sponsored by the Hudson Area Library. It's at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, January 24th, and it features Marie Reynolds, the curator at Stottsburg State Park, and an avid ice skater, talking about the history of competitive skating, early indoor ice rinks, fashion, and more about ice skating in New York in the Gilded Age. Go to the WGXC community calendar online to find out the way to get the Zoom link to tune in to Ice Skating in the Gilded Age, and add your own event at the WGXC community calendar if you want to hear it read on the radio at WGXC.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We'll be right back. Welcome to Ginger Radio Hour. I'm Justin Maiman. You're listening to WJXC 90.7 FM, and I'm live in the studio today in Acre. This, of course, is Professor Longhair, the song, the title, track, Big Chief. Today, we're going to learn all sorts of things. I've been learning so many things during this show over the past 15, 16 months. But today, we're going to learn about the beaver. The writer Layla Phillip is my guest. She wrote the tremendous book called Beaverland, which is all about how the beaver made and remade both the Hudson Valley and North America, over and over. But I think to get there, I think I need to set this up. So let me try this.
Today, I want to teach you the beaver song. This is a counting song, and it's got a few actions in it. So I'll walk you through it. We'll try to go slow. Beaver one, beaver all, let's all do the beaver call. Beaver two, beaver three, let's all climb the beaver tree. Beaver four, beaver five, let's all do the beaver jive. Beaver six, beaver seven, let's all go to beaver heaven. Beaver eight, beaver nine, stop. It's beaver time. Go beaver, go beaver, go beaver, go beaver. I hope you enjoyed that. This can be a lot of fun to do in a big group. Feel free to make up your own actions and verses for this as well.
Pretty good, right? The beaver song. Song I never knew about. But apparently it helps you learn how to count. Not much about the beaver, but that's what Ginger Radio Hour is about. Today you'll learn all about the beaver. An excerpt with my conversation with Layla Phillip is coming up in about 15 minutes, and she'll also read from her book, Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. First, we're going to play a whole bunch of music. I should give a shout-out to the beaver song singer Michelle, who works with the Building for Kids Children's Museum in Appleton, Wisconsin. She did a pretty good job, I think. So, here we go. Let's dive back into some music. You're listening to Ginger Radio Hour.
I'm going to a town that has already been burnt down. I'm going to a place that has already been disgraced. I'm gonna see some folks who have already been let down. I'm so tired of America. I'm gonna make it up for all of the Sunday time. I'm gonna
A sleepy golden storm. Many love before us. I know we are not new. In city and in forest, they love like me and you. Now it's come to distances. Both of us must try. Your eyes fill with sorrow. I'm not looking for another as I wander in my time. Walk me to the corner, our steps will always rhyme. You know my love goes with you, your love stays with me. It's just the way life changes, like the shoreline of the sea. Let's not talk of love or change, things we can't untie. Your eyes fill with sorrow, hey, that's no way to say goodbye. Like a sleepy golden storm. Many love before us. I know we are not new. And in city and in forest, they love like me and you. But now it's come to distances. Both of us must try. Your eyes fill with sorrow. Steps will always rhyme. You know my heart goes with you. Your love stays with me. It's just the way life changes, like the shoreline of the sea. But let's not talk of love or change, things we can untie. Your eyes fill with sorrow. Hey, that's no way. Thank you.
So many ways, so many ways to love. So much love for one heart to try to. So many stages, so many stages to kill. So much time for one act to.
That's Benjamin Clementine. He has a brand new album. Came out in October and I totally missed it. It's called And I Have Been. And that was a track called Atonement. I was lucky enough to see him a couple years ago in Pittsburgh. And he blew my mind. And I've been a big fan ever since. And somehow I missed this new album, which I think you'll hear more from here on Ginger Radio Hour this year. Again, that was Benjamin Clementine. The track was Atonement. Roberta Flack sang Hey, That's No Way to Say Goodbye. And starting this set, Rufus Wainwright with Going to a Town. So the theme today, I think, is learning. It's always a good theme for January and the new year. I'm learning the Beaver Song. We're all going to learn more about beavers with writer Layla Philip in a couple minutes. And in the course of preparing for today's show, I learned that Benjamin Clementine has a new album. I learned lots of things. So, one more track before we get to a reading and my conversation with Layla Philip. This is Rye Cooter and Manuel Galban.
Mm-hmm.
So several weeks ago, I had the pleasure to speak with Layla Philip. She wrote the new book, Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. In our conversation here in a moment, she'll explain more why she thinks the beaver is so wonderfully weird. And I think she's right. But to set up this conversation, I want to tell you two things. One is that Layla Philip is from the Hudson Valley. She knows the Hudson Valley well. She currently lives in Connecticut, where she had several beaver dams near her house, and that was kind of the genesis of this book. To set up the beginning of our conversation, she really wanted to make clear to me how much we still don't understand about the beaver. But then she did an excellent job of explaining what we do understand to an extent, and that we're learning more and more about the beaver every day. So here is my conversation with Layla Philip.
So there are a lot of factors we don't really fully understand a lot about the social life of beavers. And I think it's partly because, and I write about this in the book, as I would discover, you know, beavers have fascinated us for millennium, for centuries, and every continent that there are beavers, people have been fascinated by them. But we tended to study their constructions because they're so brilliant, right? They make these amazing dams and lodges. But the animal itself, only recently have people really started to study the animal. So what we don't know about the beaver probably outweighs what we do.
So what could you tell me about the beavers that you see on a daily or a weekly basis?
Gosh, there's so many ways to answer that question. It's such a wonderful question. I mean, they are wonderfully weird. And the other day someone said, you know, what's weird about a beaver? And I said, well, I think I'll flip that and tell me what isn't weird about a beaver, because they have these beautiful bear-like faces. Then you move down their body and they seem very much like, a seal almost in the water. They're incredibly dynamic, and they have these then dexterous hands with five very nimble fingers, and they have naked palms. So when you watch beavers manipulating twigs or doing things with their fingers, like they can eat food very delicately, they just seem human-like. It's extraordinary. And I have a lot of fun describing that in the book. But then you move down and they have these huge goose-like feet, and then this really crazy tail that looks like it's been run over, you know. And it looks like it has scales, but those are not scales. That's actually skin. And the tail is so filled with blood vessels that it's incredibly sensitive to temperature changes. It acts as a kind of air conditioner in the summer. It helps cool the beaver. It helps the beaver understand if the water pressure has changed. And then it's this rudder. So the beavers swim using their tail. And beavers never walk backwards. They kind of will rise up and sort of rest on their tail. So they use it as a prop. They're just fantastic animals. I mean, there are many amazing, wonderful animals in the world. But to me, one of the things that was, I think, very exciting to discover about beavers, and I really leaned in the book, was they're this kind of ordinary miracle. You know, they've been so taken for granted or considered a pest or a nuisance. And yet they are the only animal besides humans that construct their world. So they're brilliant. And in fact, they can build in flood conditions better than we can. So, you know, one of the researchers that I write about at Harvard, who was studying beavers for her dissertation in engineering, she was positioned in a lab that studies robotics in part. And it was really interesting because in talking to her, she was saying, you know, if you could design, if you could figure out the algorithm and program a bot to do what a beaver does in a high flood situation, that would be a super handy thing for humans. So I think scientists and engineers are pretty excited by the things that beavers can potentially teach us. But I should say, using traditional metrics of intelligence, what's called the EQ ratio, which is kind of like a brain-body ratio that we've always used to look at animals, beavers don't rank very high. They're like lower than a squirrel. So we don't understand fully how they do what they do. And that's one of the fun mysteries about them. And, you know, not to be coy, I, as you know, because I think you've read the book, I write about this. And this researcher at Harvard is starting to, I think, crack the code of beaver intelligence by thinking about their intelligence in a different way, not so much as the intelligence of an individual animal, but the intelligence of a collective. And I think that's pretty fascinating.
So I have so many follow-ups, but I'd like to be in here. You just brought up this idea of the collective intelligence of beavers. And can you just specifically talk about what exactly that is for a moment? Because it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's possible that beavers have a kind of intelligence that is closer to something like ants or termites or bees, and is a kind of intelligence that we don't readily understand or connect to, because we think about things in terms of our own intelligence, which is cognition, right, from an individual brain. But something like termites will build large constructions based on environmental clues. So an individual termite is arguably not very smart, but they are following simple rules and responding to clues from the environment. Literally, termites will leave hormonal scents for one another that basically say, build here. And this researcher at Harvard has made the case that really beavers are responding to environmental clues, and she's identified some of them. And in that respect, by working together, following simple rules, they can build these extraordinary dams, for example. So we know that the largest animal construction seen from space, because it's been seen by satellite, is a beaver dam. It's over a half a mile long. I mean, that's longer than the Hoover Dam. That is really big. And it has endured for decades. So these are constructions that one single beaver could not have built, because a beaver doesn't live for 50 years. So successive generations of beavers have been working on this one site. So then the question is, how do they know to do that? How do they know to go to that place? And she identified one of these environmental cues, and the environmental cues are called stigmergy. So she identified one of these cues as being the volumetric flow rate. So she was studying beavers out in Montana that were building dams after the spring floods. So she wanted to find populations of beavers that were building fresh every year, so she could make sure she could, you know, identify when they were going into the water to build. And beavers don't have measuring equipment, but she did, and she identified that when the current was exactly 250 liters per second, they would go in and start building. And that's exactly the current rate, the flow rate, at which their dams could prevail. So they waited until the really heavy runoff was over from the, you know, spring melt from the Rockies, because their dams would have been washed out by those strong currents. But they knew that they needed to build when there was enough water to really capture and swell a pond. You know, if they waited until it was an arid summer condition, they would never get a pond, right? There wouldn't be enough water because it's an arid North Plains situation. So the water's going to dry out. So what they're doing is incredibly brilliant, and it works every time. So she identified some of the environmental cues, and Previously, it was thought that beavers were cued by the sound of running water, which is probably true, but that can't be the only thing, because no beaver has ever tried to build on Niagara Falls, right? I mean, if they were only cued by the sound of running water, and the louder the water, the more they would try to build, they would then try to build in situations where the shear rate of the water was just too high. And they don't do that. They know when to go in, build, and have their dams prevail. So, and she also argues that we could learn a great deal from beavers in terms of better, more flood resilient dam design, because beavers don't try to build just one dam to hold all the water. They will build a series of usually three dams or even five. So imagine a succession of dams. So if the first dam breaches, the second dam catches that, and then the third and the fourth. So that force of water during an extreme flood event is being captured and sustained by five dams, right, instead of just one. So, you know, we could probably learn a great deal. And this is something I really write about in the book, that, you know, beavers really have a lot to teach us right now as we face climate change. We almost wiped them out, but they're one of the greatest conservation comeback stories, as I put it, of the 20th century. And they can help us with the greatest crisis of our generation, which is climate change. So floods, fire, drought, all these things, which are pressing problems now, and we know are going to get worse. Beavers are in the landscape, and they can really help us with those problems, which I think is, you know, we need stories of hope and resiliency in this moment if we're going to face our collective future and, you know, in a proactive way, and do the things we need to do in time, because we don't have a lot of time.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's also, you know, you do strike an optimistic tone in many parts of the book. And one of them especially is when you describe the Hubbard Brook watershed site and what happened there, because for 60 years or so, beavers and the watershed itself was allowed to just be without any, I guess, I don't want to say human interaction. There were humans going in, but without any development or any kind of pushes into this watershed site. Can you talk a bit about what happened during those 60 years in New Hampshire?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. You know, that was a really, to me, a really important chapter in the book. And I thought a lot about, you know, how am I going to teach readers about, A, what a watershed is, and the really tremendous value of beavers, because it's not just that they build an individual pond. That pond is part of a river system, and that river system is part of a watershed. So, you know, when rain falls in the watershed anywhere, it needs to end up in those creeks and streams and in the river system. And that water is either stored and cleansed and gets down into, the levels where we can use it, or it rushes back out into the ocean. And so in Hubbard Brook, which was founded in 1955, so for, as you point out, over 70 years, the land has been pretty much untouched. It's almost 8,000 acres. It's an entire watershed, and it's an incredibly important watershed, I should say. That's where acid rain was discovered. So it's been environmentally incredibly important place. So in terms of ecology studies and watershed studies, so going up into the watershed with Dr. Burstead and tromping around after her, what we were witnessing and why I went up there was to see rivers that were, beavers were returning to their, something close to the state before colonization. So these are called paleo rivers. So colonization, which basically starts about 1600, So say 1600 to 1900 geomorphologists now regularly call that the Great Drying, because that's when combination of things like the fur trade, which took out the beaver, and then the timbering of the forests and the resource extraction that went on, and then the, you know, patterns of industrialization really degraded the river system to the extent that we have what we have today, a river system that's not functioning in a healthy way. So we lose a lot of our water. And this is where beavers come in. So it was amazing to see these creeks and streams that in only 70 years, the beavers had built dams and beaver damming complexes in, so that they were starting to move and shift. And instead of being, say, a thin braid of water, what we're used to, a creek or a stream through the woods, they were multi-threaded. Imagine just a like an artery of water or a series of veins that fan out through the woods. And that's what a paleo river looks like. And so the water, when there's spring floods, will flood and overfill the banks. And then when it dries out, it will recede. And that kind of pulsing and rhythmic flooding and contracting is the ecological health of the river system. And that's what the beavers have returned to the watershed. And so it was really fantastic to see what that looked like. It was so different than the streams and creeks I had grown up with. You know, I just, it made it dramatically clear to me that I had grown up in an environment that was highly degraded, and I just didn't understand it. And I really wanted to try to share that with the reader so readers could understand where we are, the work we need to do, and I think the really exciting ways we can harness what beavers are doing to help us. You know, we can't move all our infrastructure. We're not going to move Hartford off the Connecticut River, but there are many, many open areas where we can have beavers. We can let them do what they do. We can let rivers and creeks and streams move more freely and bring a lot more water and function back to our river system. And we need it. I mean, I think the drought last summer taught us a big lesson, even in here in the East, where we get so much rain. You know, we're kind of, I think, unlike the West, which has been so concerned about water for so long, in the East, we've gotten a bit lazy about it, you know, thinking, well, it rains, so we'll always have water. Well, in fact, there was a report from UMass, I think about a week ago, documenting that water levels have really gone down. And so, yes, we may get rain, but if the river system isn't functioning and all that water is just rushing out into the ocean eventually, and it's not getting down into the aquifer, that rain isn't doing what it needs to do. It's not actually hydrating, right, the land. And if the ground gets so dried out, it can't even absorb the water. Right, it gets hard packed, like think of the Dust Bowl, right, that Steinbeck wrote about, right? So I think we are at a moment of reckoning on so many levels, and it's really important for us to think about the things we can do right in our own backyard, you know, wherever we live. Wherever there are beavers, there is the possibility for better environmental health.
I learned so much from Layla in this book. A couple quick takeaways from me. One, beavers never walk backwards. That is something that will stick with me forever. I guess it seems obvious when you think hard about the beaver tail. Also, that beavers don't really walk. They kind of shuffle on land. They much prefer water. Anyway, that's one of the things. The second is, beavers were really Earth's first engineers. And Layla Philip goes into great detail in the book to talk about the intricate ways beavers construct dams. Also, I wanted to point out that towards the beginning of that conversation, she's talking about this Harvard researcher who has been studying the beaver and talking and thinking about this idea of collective intelligence. That Harvard researcher is Jordan Kennedy. We brought her name up later in the conversation, but it wasn't in that excerpt. So, I'd like to play you a quick snippet of Layla reading from her book. She considers the book science writing, which I think is, of course, true. I might even call it science prose. But there's one moment just towards the beginning of the book where Layla throws all that off and imagines for a moment what it might be like to be this beaver that she is gazing down upon from a bridge. So let me play that.
A quiver on the surface, twitch of grass, and she is frozen. She turns one great webbed foot and grabs the pond's water, slowly turning as if she were a wooden top. Her small brown head with its bear-like ears lifts ever so slightly, the short blunt nose level with the water's surface, black eyes peering. The pond shimmers with insects. Green wafts of algae thrum, each cell an engine of chemical reactions. Photosynthesis turning sunlight to sugar, energy into biomass. She waits, floating in the sun-warmed water, senses flaring. Her nostrils widen, taking in the sweet stink of waterlogged weed and wood. Then a new smell, acrid, metallic. Her brain flashes danger, muscles pulse. She flings her head forward, thrusting her back out of the water and dives. On the way down, her tail slams the surface, a paddle crack, a warning. Her head cleaves the water, clear, nictitating membranes shielding her eyes like swimming goggles. She sees through the murk. She is not the predator here, she is prey. She dives and dives, her life a question answered by the speed of her flight. Down she goes, hell-bent for the bottom of the pond. Her body swoops, all muscle now, propelling her through the pond as if following a groove. Her webbed toes spread like sails, grab the water, push. She dodges hazy shapes, sticks and branches, boulders and stones, water lily stalks and black, thick pond grass. The pond's surface now just memory, a distant lid. She seems more fish than mammal now, her tail a rudder, her ears and windpipe sealed from the water. Though the dive slows her heart rate, electric currents of fear zing through her body. Her short front paws scramble, the surprising fingers ripping through the thick strands of water lilies. On the surface, the lilies bloom in elegant profusion of yellow and white. Down here, they are a dark maze through which she must maneuver. She swims deeper, deeper into layers of welcoming silt, her inner lips closed behind her teeth, keeping water from her lungs. The mud-filled water ruffles her mouth, while along her back the dark slurry carries her fur. She feels its weight and pushes harder still. She knows she is almost there. Then, that sudden coolness, like absolution, and she parts the dark curtain. She slows, turns, glides along the canal. Only there, moving along the intricate highway she and others have clawed through the mud on the bottom of the pond, can she rest, swimming slowly through the underwater pathways. Ahead, she senses a rising darkness. She dives once more, then swims up through a tunnel and breaks the surface. She fills her lungs and climbs quickly out into the dome of the lodge, safely home.
water may stop warm. This do not forget. When things become too warm, make them a little wet. And douse them with a mouthful. Put the baby down. Clean the earth surrounding and cause the worm to drown. And introduce to every soul a drink made of tears. Hear them bicker, watch them die impaled on balls of spears. And looking in the morning, the streets are flooded out. The men are wailing toothless, the ladies go sleep out. And they shout. Our shoes are wet, our skin is cold, and we no longer fear the voices of the brave or bold are making what is to come clear. Well, future is diminished by what today we did. We wetted warmth and killed it, and in the water hid. We wetted warmth and killed it, and in the water hid.
I'm back. You've been listening to Ginger Radio Hour. I want to thank writer Layla Phillip. Go check out her book, Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. Also, make a goal this year to befriend a beaver. I don't mean to go bring it into your home and make it a pet. I mean, just make sure they get taken care of. They're not a pest. That's one to grow on. It's been an hour of learning here today on Ginger Radio Hour. We just heard a track from Beirut, Autumn Tall Tales. And before that, coming out of Layla Phillips, wonderful reading, Bonnie Prince Billy, the track Cold and Wet, may be appropriate for today. This, of course, is Percy Faith and his orchestra. Some of you may have guessed the melody here. It's Ballad of Easy Rider. I'm going to let that take us to the end of the show today. Thank you again for listening to Ginger Radio Hour here on WGXC 90.7 FM, live from the Acre Studio. I'm looking out on a pond and wondering if recently there have been beavers there. I'll go find out. Have a wonderful year.